Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Former Endeavor CEO touts Basin's growth. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. As chief executive officer of Endeavor Energy Resources until its sale to Diamondback Energy, Lance Robertson had a front-row seat to the Permian Basin's growth during the last two decades. Quote, approximately 60% of the Permian Basin's producing wells were drilled in the last 24 months, he told members of the Permian Basin section of the Society of Petroleum Engineers during its Permian Basin Energy Conference. Quote, nowhere has an area gone from 1 million barrels to 6 million barrels. That's an unprecedented change, end quote. Technology has given U.S. operators better ideas, better applications to produce oil and natural gas, allowing output to rise from 2 million barrels to 13 million barrels, and making the nation the world's top producer, he said. That is impacting the world, he said, as other nations seek U.S. energy. Quote, global energy demand has risen 500% in the last 10 years, Robertson told the gathering. Demand is expected to double by 2050. We're going to need to do a lot more of everything. No single source is going to fill demand, end quote. Developing nations want the abundance the U.S. has, he said, and the U.S., driven by the Permian Basin, has the ability to provide low-cost, abundant, reliable energy, quote, so they can make their own choices, grow their own economies, and lift themselves out of poverty. We need to provide that energy, end quote. Robertson said beginning around 2020, investors pushed exploration and production companies to begin practicing fiscal discipline, a trend he doesn't see coming to an end. He also expects activity levels to remain relatively flat for the next several years. He said the Permian Basin will drill an estimated 5,400 wells a year, equal to all other producing basins combined. Innovation will allow Tier 2 locations to become Tier 1 innovations from enhanced oil recovery, refracturing existing wells, and developing new horizons will spur production, he said. Quote, we have decades of production left. It just won't look the same, he said. Warrior Technologies expands into Delaware Basin with Lobo Trucking acquisition. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Warrior Technologies has announced a strategic acquisition that follows its acquisition of a large division of a private Permian Basin-based company made in the summer of 2022. The Midland-based company has acquired Lobo Trucking, expanding Warrior's footprint deeper and more extensively into the Delaware Basin of both Texas and New Mexico. Quote, Lobo is 24 years old and incredibly well-run, well-staffed company, said Trip Womack, chairman and founder. The motivation for Warrior to buy Lobo was we wanted to expand into the Delaware Basin, end quote. He noted that the two companies had only one overlapping business line, vacuum trucks, giving Warrior the opportunity to offer its more than nine business lines out of Lobo's yards in Hobbs and Artesia, New Mexico. Commented Jeremy Jackson, Senior Vice President of Business Development, quote, this purchase gives us the opportunity to have a large presence in two of the most active basins in the U.S., end quote. Jackson noted that the company has transitioned from its original focus of wellbore exposure at its founding in 2018 to a focus on mechanical integrity and allows Warrior to work not only with oil and gas companies, but renewables, municipalities, state and federal agencies, agriculture, and even food processing. Quote, "The most exciting thing we get into is the plugging and abandonment side of things. Soil remediation, reclamation, abandonment of old wells," Jackson said. "It requires highly special equipment with their own support services, all of which Warrior provides." Womack likened the equipment to huge scissors that cut the impacted soil into small pieces, which is then hauled away in Warrior's own roll-off boxes. He said the company has been performing such work with both the Texas Railroad Commission and New Mexico Oil Conservation Division. Gas remediation is another line, according to Jackson, who said large operators have turned to the company for their gas remediation needs, which helps cut down on emissions and on flaring. Womack said he doesn't anticipate losing any of Lobo's personnel. He estimated the acquisition adds 53 to Warrior's headcount, increasing it to over 250 people. In addition, Lobo adds 46 operating units to Warrior's existing 100-unit fleet. He also said it will continue to operate under the Lobo brand. Quote, "It's a pleasure to find a company that's so extremely well-run," Womack said. Civitas Resources expands in Permian Basin, focuses on growth pillars. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. On four pillars rests the business strategy and growth of Civitas Resources, generating free cash flow, maintaining a premier balance sheet, returning capital to shareholders, and demonstrating environment, social, and governance, or ESG, leadership. Quote, "Those four pillars dictate where you look as you seek to expand," said Chris Doyle, president and chief executive officer of Civitas Resources. And where the Denver-based company looked as it realized it needed to scale up was the Permian Basin, he told members of the Permian Basin section of the Society of Petroleum Engineers at its annual Permian Basin Energy Conference. The company made a transformation entrance into the Permian Basin in 2023 and now has 112,200 net acres, drilled 120 gross wells so far in 2024, with a 2.2-mile average lateral length, and is producing 344,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day. Quote, "We've built the company through strategic consolidation to build scale. It's about getting enough critical mass. Valuation correlates to scale, but it's important where the scale is," he said. That 2023 acquisition gave Civitas operating scale in two of the country's lowest break-even shale basins, the Denver-Julesburg and Permian. "It's also important to put together a team that knows each basin best," Doyle added, quoting Colin Powell's "hire for strength rather than lack of weakness" advice. In addition to getting the right team, he advised operators to peel as much cost out of operations as possible and maintaining those low costs, he said. Quote, "That's important because it extends the life of assets. The industry has a strong track record of capital efficiency improvements and will find ways to move inventory into the economic category," he said. "What the industry does is so important, and the need to develop resources so important that Doyle thinks it needs to get back to its roots. Quote, "We have lost the ability to explore," he said. "As a company, I think we need to get back to our roots and look for additional resources," he said. Ichthys Energy eyes growth with post-oak backing. The story was written by Mellon McEwen, oil editor. A new energy company is targeting opportunities in the Permian Basin. Ichthys Energy Partners, co-founded by CEO Michael Pointer and CFO Will Weidick, has received an equity commitment from Post Oak Energy Capital. Quote, "We think this is the right time for our strategy right now," Pointer told the Reporter Telegram. The company's strategy is an exploration and production company focused on operated and non-operated leasehold acquisitions and strategic partnerships in the Permian. Pointer noted that he and Weidick, though based in Dallas, have strong ties to Midland. He said he sees the consolidation among Permian Basin upstream companies has opened up opportunities for companies like Ichthys. Quote, "We may uncover opportunities that may be overlooked or that don't move the needle for larger companies," he explained. Pointer said the company has a particular focus on New Mexico, but is also looking at areas like the Midland Basin and Southern Delaware Basin. His and Weidick's background is in the Delaware, and he said there may be opportunities in New Mexico for creative operators to be strategic in acquisitions. Weidick said they have interest beyond the large markets and want to be creative, look at small-scale opportunities, and be balanced in its approach to extend opportunities. Quote, "We want to be creative and innovative to be able to move quickly," Weidick said. A big part of the strategy is to buy non-operated small interests with partners and then target larger acquisitions that present opportunities, said Pointer. "The ultimate strategy is to operate assets," he said. Quote, "We are in the process of acquiring assets. Those are in various stages of evaluation," Pointer said. He added that one of the keys to Ichthys' success will be partnerships between him and Weidick, between the company and Post Oak, and between the company and operators and non-operators. Quote, "As far as the industry, we believe this is the right time for us to be involved. The world needs cheap, efficient, accessible energy. We hope to be a small, growing part of that. Within the Permian Basin, we believe it is the best oil-producing basin in North America. Given consolidation, given our strategy, our background, and our network, this is the right time to be in the Permian Basin," said Pointer.
At least 75 sickened as deadly McDonald's E. coli outbreak expands. A deadly outbreak of E. coli poisoning tied to McDonald's Quarter Pounders has expanded with at least 75 people sick in 13 states, federal health officials said Friday. A total of 22 people have now been hospitalized, and two have developed a dangerous kidney disease complication, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said. One person has died in Colorado. No definite source of the outbreak has been identified, officials with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration said. Early information analyzed by the FDA showed that uncooked slivered onions used on the burgers are a likely source of contamination, the agency said. McDonald's has confirmed that Taylor Farms, a California-based produce company, was the supplier of the fresh onions used in the restaurants involved in the outbreak, and that they had come from a facility in Colorado Springs, Colorado. "We have made the decision to stop sourcing onions from Taylor Farms, Colorado Springs facility indefinitely," McDonald's said in a statement released last Friday. Taylor Farms said Friday it had preemptively recalled yellow onions sent to its customers from its Colorado facility and continues to work with the CDC and the FDA as they investigate. While it remains unclear if the recalled onions were the source of the outbreak, several other fast food restaurants, including Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, KFC, and Burger King, pulled onions from some menus in certain areas this week. Symptoms of E. coli poisoning can occur quickly within a day or two of eating contaminated food. They typically include fever, vomiting, diarrhea, or bloody diarrhea, and signs of dehydration. Little or no peeing, increased thirst, and dizziness. The infection is especially dangerous for children younger than 5, people who are elderly, pregnant, or who have weakened immune systems.
Satin Strings has rich history. Started in 1988 by Charles Nail, Permian High School's Satin Strings Ensemble is one of the premier groups in the basin. It has traveled around the world and made its mark. Nail got the idea from watching an Air Force Sterling Strings Ensemble at a conference. He decided he could have his students do the same, Permian High School Orchestra Director Todd Barrage said. Barrage was a junior at Permian High School when Satin Strings started, and now he directs it. There were about 15 people in it at the time. Quote, "We started going around and memorizing music. There was even a book that we followed that had pre-described music, pre-described motions. It's not a unique idea, but for West Texas at that time, it was one of the first truly independent ensembles outside of your traditional orchestra or your traditional marching band," Barrett said. After Nail retired, Kathy Fishburne took over and made it super popular. When she was director, they got invited to go to the 50th anniversary of D-Day and played in Normandy, France. They were also invited to do 2 inaugurations in Chihuahua, Mexico. Quote, "They've been all over the place. When David Golden was the director, he took them, along with the bands from Odessa High School and Permian High School, to Pasadena, California, and Satin Strings, while they were there, played for renowned composer John Williams," Barrett said. Since Barrett got to Permian High School, they have traveled internationally several times. When they're asked, they do a tour and play in several different places. But Barrett likes to say that their favorite gigs are at home. Quote, "That's true, because we like to play for our local people, but ever since COVID, most of the live performances out in the public have kind of dried up," he said. They are starting to get some of them back, but some of the larger corporations no longer have Christmas parties, he said. There are 30 students in Satin Strings this year. Barrett said they average anywhere between 25 and 35 musicians. One year, they had 40, but when he was in it, there were 12 or 15. Quote, "We try to keep it that way so that every part is covered twice or 3 times. So, if we have a performance, there's always going to be somebody on the part and not playing solo," Barrett said. Satin Strings plays everything from classical to rock to country to bluegrass to Celtic music. Quote, "It's all there. We do everything. Matter of fact, this first concert we're having, we're doing classical, country, bluegrass, 80s, synth pop, and some Scottish music," Barrett said. The group will perform at the 22nd annual Spooktacular concert at 7 p.m. October 28th at the MCM Grande Fun Dome. The event will feature the orchestras of Permian, Bonham, Nimitz, and Wilson & Young. There will be music, food, prizes for the best costumes, and fun. Reserve tickets are $20, and are on sale until noon on October 28th. They also get called to perform at HEB's Feast of Sharing and different retirement homes. Quote, "And of course, that's what we're supposed to do. We go out there, they're very gracious, they pay us for our time, or they buy the kids food. But that's part of the charter of Satin Strings, is that we go out in the public and we spread the gospel of mojo, so to speak," Barrett said. Students audition for the group every April, even if they are already in it. It's rare that a freshman makes it, but it has happened. Quote, "It's a difficult audition to make. Some kids, you know they're going to make it, and they slide right in. That's why we tend to have a freshman orchestra, so you can find a feel out who's going to be in there. But then some kids will come in, they'll just surprise you, and they'll have worked on it, and worked on it, and worked on it, and through working on that audition, they become better musicians themselves. It translates into the orchestra. They make it translate into Satin Strings. It translates into their confidence, their willingness to go out into the public and play a solo. It's amazing what this does to kids," Barrett's added. All these students in Satin Strings are the ones that usually pass their classes. If they pass their classes, they can play. They used to have more crossover from band and orchestra than they do now, because students have to choose pathways and have to select from orchestra, band, choir, or theater. They have the most crossover right now with the dance team Panther Paws and orchestra. The hierarchy is the symphony orchestra. Quote, "They're the parent organization, and then Satin Strings is just an auxiliary part of it. Over in choir, you have Kantarai, that's their top choir, and Black Magic is an auxiliary," Barrett said. An El Paso native, he moved to Odessa in second grade. He earned a bachelor's degree in music education from Texas Tech University and got his first job in Vernon, teaching choir and band. Barris taught for 10 or 11 years at the Metroplex in Denton and Flower Mound. Then he got a call from then-director of fine arts, Randy Talley, that brought him back to Odessa. That was 17, almost 18 years ago. Nail was a big influence on Barris. Quote, "He taught me patience, virtue, how to practice," he said. Nail was in charge of band and orchestra at the time. Quote, "The way he handled kids and the way that he brought music out of kids, that just made me want to do the same thing. I felt that was my calling," Barrett said. Barrett and his wife Jessica, an assistant principal at Reagan Elementary School, have two children. Seniors Aliana Rivera and Andrea Valenzuela have been in Satin Strings for 3 years. Rivera is 18, and Valenzuela is 17. Both are in the symphony, play violin, and first saw Satin Strings in elementary school around Christmas time. Valenzuela thought it was cool that Satin Strings players didn't look at music. Her aunt works at a nursing home, and Valenzuela was there when the group would play for the residents. Quote, "I just thought that was so sweet to give back to the community with music, and that's why I wanted to join," Valenzuela said. Rivera and Valenzuela said they have enjoyed bonding with everyone, and they enjoy practicing together as an ensemble. Quote, "My favorite part of being in this group is definitely the community and being with people that think alike, and they have the same passion in music as you. We're also close together being in the same group for multiple years. You build all these friendships with people, and that spreads throughout your high school. It's not just an orchestra," Valenzuela said. Master Gardeners, Bulbs Bring Spring Color. The story was written by Master Gardeners Debbie Rowland and Emmy Almschneider. Nothing says spring more than a garden full of color. Bulbs are the traditional harbingers of spring. There are many types of bulbs, and the reason we grow them is that they bloom at a certain time and then are dormant or hidden for the rest of the year. Now is the time to plant traditional spring bulbs like daffodils, crocuses, narcissus, and hyacinths. Spring bulbs need time to be exposed to soil that is cooling before the actual freezing weather sets in. It is a good idea to check your soil temperature about 6 inches below the surface. When that reaches 60 degrees Fahrenheit, you should be okay to plant. So, how do you start? First, research the bulbs you love and want to see if they would grow well in West Texas. If they originated in the Mediterranean area, for instance, you would plant them in a part of your yard that best mimics that area, sunny and dry. Second, inspect the bulbs before you buy them. A catalog might be your best bet, but if you buy locally, avoid bulbs that are spongy, moldy, or withered up. The general rule is that the bigger the bulb, the more flowers it will produce. With bulbs, it can take several years before they reach their full blooming capacity. Third, pick a location with appropriate sun exposure and soil moisture. Bulbs generally do not like to have their feet wet because it can cause them to rot. Remember that bulbs planted in the fall flower before trees get their first blooms, so you can even plant around trees since they won't be providing shade that early in the spring. Fourth, plant your bulbs. You will need your bulbs, a spade, and possibly bone meal. A natural appearance in your yard is always best. To make this happen, loosen the area you want to cover and arrange the bulbs all at once, then cover. Another method is to just toss them in the air and plant them where they land, avoiding planting in rows. Remember to always plant in odd numbers. There is no need to fertilize bulbs when planting since the embryo for next year's plant is already inside. But if your soil is not up to par, you can add a handful of bone meal or balanced fertilizer. Bulbs are planted to a depth of twice the height of the bulb. For instance, if the bulb is 3 inches long, it should be planted about 6 inches deep. The pointed end of the bulb is the stem and should be pointed up when planted. If you have some that do not have an obvious pointed end, then just lay it on its side and you are good to go. If you have squirrels or rodents in your area, you may want to lay a small piece of chicken wire over them before you cover with soil. The bulb will grow through the wire, but hopefully will stop the digging process. Sprinkling red pepper flakes in the hole may help as well. Once planted, water well, then just sit back and let nature take its course. If we have a particularly dry winter, you may want to water every few weeks, but bulbs don't require much attention through this time. Fifth, cut the bulbs back to ground level when they have finished blooming and the leaves are completely yellow and dry. If you cut them down too soon, the plant will not have had time to photosynthesize food for the next season's bulb, resulting in weak plants next season. Most bulbs multiply from the original bulb and in a few years can become overcrowded. When that happens, dig them up, separate, and replant for the best show. Discard the bulbs that are small or damaged, but pass along any extras you have to give the gift of spring color. You'll be glad you did. If you have questions, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700. Additional information and our blog for access to past articles is available at westtexasgardening.org. Click on Resources.
Turning 65 and Still Working by Tony King. I have a few questions about enrolling in Medicare since I am turning 65 this January. 1. Will my Medicare start automatically in January since I am still working? 2. If I retire when I'm 67, do I stay on COBRA or enroll in a Medicare plan? And 3. What happens if I get another job? Friends and coworkers tell me one thing about Medicare, and the massive number of telemarketing calls I am receiving are telling me something else. Can you please explain what I should do? I am sure there are others in Medicare land who need answers to these worrisome yet semi-simple Medicare questions. And Tony says, "You're smart to be asking these questions now. Enrolling in Medicare the right way will help you avoid later enrollment penalties, which you would pay for the rest of your Medicare life. Below are answers to a few common Medicare questions which are discussed during a Tony Says Medicare consultation, whether in person or as a Zoom consultation. 1. Is the Medicare enrollment process automatic? Answer. Medicare enrollment is automatic only if you are receiving your Social Security benefits before turning 65. If you are not receiving your Social Security check, you will not be enrolled in Medicare and will need to apply online at www.ssa.gov/Medicare/signup. If you are not working full-time with employer benefits or working full-time and want Medicare as your health benefits, not signing up at the right time is costly, especially after 65 and leaving employer benefits. When leaving your employer after 65, your employer fills out Medicare Form CMS-L564, Request for Employment Information, and you fill out a CMS 40B, Application for Enrollment in Medicare Part B, which tells when you want Medicare B to begin. Write Special Enrollment Period across the top to specify that you are enrolling after turning 65. Take both forms to your local Social Security office for your Medicare to begin. Chapter 1 of Tony's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition explains in detail enrolling in Medicare when past 65 and retiring. Secondly, should I enroll in Medicare even if offered COBRA health insurance when I leave my job, or enroll in a Medicare plan? Tony answers, yes, enroll in Medicare. Although you might need COBRA to cover a spouse or dependent child, Medicare should be your primary insurance coverage once you are 65 or older and not working full-time with company benefits. You will want to enroll in Medicare Parts A and B. Explore which option is best for your Medicare situation, either a Medicare supplement that works with original Medicare and a standalone Medicare Part D plan, or a Medicare Advantage plan with Medicare Part D prescription drug coverage included. Many COBRA health plans will allow the COBRA retiree enrolled in Medicare Parts A and B to opt out of the COBRA plan while the family stays on COBRA. Thirdly, what if I become unemployed or retire, enroll in Medicare, and then go back into a full-time job? Tony answers, if your new employer provides health insurance, you can disenroll from Medicare Part B by contacting Medicare at 1-800-633-4227. Request the form to delay your Medicare Part B because you now have medical benefits provided by your or your spouse's new employer. You can re-enroll when you finally retire without paying late enrollment penalties by having the current employer sign CMS-L564 Request for Employment Information form and filing it with the CMS-40B to reapply for Medicare Part B with Social Security. Readers, following advice from well-meaning friends who do not know Medicare's specific rules can jeopardize your Medicare, so be sure to research the facts. With Medicare, it's what you don't know that will hurt you. Need Medicare help? Call the Tony Says Medicare hotline at 832-519-8664 or email info@tonisays.com to schedule a consultation or for general help. Tony's books are available at tonysays.com with a bundle discount for Tony Says readers. Whispers in the Texas Wind. As the leaves shift from green to shades of red and brown, fall brings more than just hayrides, pumpkin patches, and trick-or-treating. You may not realize it while carving your jack-o'-lantern, but Texas is home to more than just famous haunted houses. You don't have to look far to stumble upon a graveyard with a story to tell. Texas boasts around 14,000 cemeteries, many of which are steeped in legends that will send a chill up your spine. Some gravestones hold dramatic tales of early settlement, disease, natural disasters, and war. From the Panhandle to the Gulf Coast, these cemeteries are living pieces of history wrapped in a touch of the supernatural. Take Oakwood Cemetery in Austin, the state's oldest graveyard. It spans 40 acres of centuries-old tombstones and is the resting place of Texas Revolution and Civil War veterans, as well as former governors like General Sam Houston. Some of the most haunting stories come from these graves. One such grave belongs to Eula Phillips, a teenager murdered on Christmas Eve in 1885. Legend has it her spirit floats through the cemetery at night, searching for answers to her untimely death. Farther southeast in Galveston lies the Old City Cemetery, where spirits are rumored to be more restless. This graveyard serves as a somber reminder of the catastrophic hurricane of 1900 that devastated the island. Thousands lost their lives, including many who were swept into the Gulf of Mexico. On stormy nights, the howling wind is said to carry the cries of men calling for help and wails of women searching for their lost children. Among those buried there is Elise Romer Alberti, Galveston's demented mother, who poisoned her five children in 1894, four of whom succumbed to it. After the murders, she was sent to the San Antonio Asylum, but returned to Galveston, where she eventually died. Buried with her children, she is sent to haunt the cemetery grounds to this day. In El Paso, Concordia Cemetery is one of Texas's largest cemeteries, covering 52 acres and holding the graves of more than 60,000 souls, including Buffalo Soldiers and Texas Rangers. Its most famous occupant is John Wesley Hardin, the notorious gunslinger of the Old West. Under the moonlight, the spirits of Hardin and other outlaws are rumored to roam the grounds, earning Concordia the nickname El Paso's Boot Hill due to its rowdy history. Texas cemeteries hold more than tombstones. They are places where the living just might happen upon spirits of the past. So whether you believe in ghosts or not, this is the season to gather around a campfire and share a scary story or two, because you never know what or who may be dying to hear it.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. Breast cancer. Why only 40% of local women get mammograms? All month long, we have been talking about making breast cancer awareness personal. by knowing about what screenings are appropriate and about being aware of your breast density. So what are some of the other reasons that only about 40% of women in the Permian Basin who should get a mammogram do so? We gathered information through a survey and found these to be some of the other reasons women are not getting their mammogram. I'm too young for a mammogram. One of the reasons women told us is that they think they're too young. The American College of Radiology recommends yearly mammograms starting at age 40. There are other societies who have recommended waiting until age 50. However, one such recommending body has changed its position to the starting age of 40 after much research. Here at the Breast Center, we have always recommended starting at age 40, unless you are high risk, and then earlier screenings are recommended. 1 in 6 breast cancers that are diagnosed are in women aged 40 to 49. These premenopausal cancers tend to be more aggressive, making screening and early detection even more important. I'm too old for a mammogram. Another reason ladies reported to us is they're too old. 1 in 8 women will develop breast cancer sometime in their lifetime. Risk continues to increase as a woman grows older. Women in their 30s, 1 in 204. Women in their 40s, 1 in 65. Women in their 50s, 1 in 42. Women in their 60s, 1 in 28. Women in their 70s, 1 in 24. As long as a woman is physically able, we encourage her to continue to get her mammogram. We have certainly diagnosed plenty of women in their 80s and 90s. Mammograms hurt. As human nature is, one of the reasons women informed us that they were not getting their mammogram is the fear that it is going to hurt. Let me start this discussion with, now that we are using 3D or tomosynthesis in our mammograms, many women have stated that they felt the procedure was much less uncomfortable. Certainly, pain is very individualized, so each person has their own tolerance of pain. However, no matter your pain tolerance level, I want to ask you ladies how many times you have danced in high heels all evening, or gotten a part of your body waxed, or did something else that going in you knew it would cause pain. My next question, will that pain you endured for a short while save your life? I don't think so, but a mammogram certainly could. I don't have time for a mammogram. As busy as everyone is these days, of course, one of the reasons that was listed was they didn't have time. In general, women tend to take care of everyone except themselves. We take care of children, spouses, parents, neighbors, coworkers, etc. But when it comes to taking care of ourselves, we put that off. Normally, you are in and out of our center within 30 minutes for a screening mammogram, and that is once a year. My question here is, how many of us spend 30 minutes a day on Facebook or watching our favorite show or podcast? Again, will this save your life? Once more, I don't think so. But 30 minutes a year invested in having your mammogram certainly can. I can't afford a mammogram. Finally, money is always on everyone's mind, and especially paying for a screening for those who are uninsured. The final barrier revealed to us was financial issues. We want to make sure everyone is aware that our friends at Pink the Basin work hard to make sure that there are funds for all women to have their mammogram and any other breast imaging that they may need. Each year, the hospital receives a grant from Pink the Basin to pay for breast imaging for those who are uninsured or underinsured. The income guidelines are quite liberal. A family of four can make up to $120,000 and still receive help. So even if you have been turned down for other funding, call us to see if we can help. Hopefully, we have addressed many of the reasons why there are still numerous women who are not following the recommendation of a yearly mammogram. If any of these are the reasons you have held back, consider getting your mammogram. Do it for yourself and for those you love. Breast cancer. Why tissue donation is vital for breast cancer reconstruction? Breast reconstruction is an option that breast cancer survivors can choose after facing a mastectomy. The partial or complete removal of breast tissue and tissue donation can play a big role in this option. Breast reconstruction is a procedure that aims to rebuild the shape and the look of the breast post-mastectomy. According to the Southwest Transplant Alliance, STA, tissue donation plays a vital role in the choice that women make when it comes to breast reconstruction. Quote, when we speak to families, tissue donation is presented as an option that can impact the lives of anywhere from 75 to 150 individuals, end quote, said Alexandra Heedley, Director of Donor and Tissue Services at STA. Quote, tissue donation is a bridge itself between life-impacting and life-saving in that it can help change somebody's life dramatically, end quote. Headley said that about 1 in 8 people are touched by types of breast cancer, whether it's a family member or themselves experiencing it. Quote, "It's a very emotional and physically challenging journey that these people are on," end quote, Headley said. Quote, "One of the options post-mastectomies is for reconstruction with utilization of tissue donation," end quote. The tissue most commonly used for breast reconstruction is the dermis or skin. Headley said that the first step in the gift of donation is for somebody to say yes to tissue donation. Quote, "We're honoring the donor family before we honor the recipients," end quote, Headley said. Quote, "The first choice is made when somebody says yes to that tissue donations, specifically to dermis or skin donation," end quote. Tissue donation can impact between 5 and 10 women or men who have had the option to choose tissue donation as part of their reconstruction options, according to STA. Quote, "Once that yes occurs, we go through the process of supporting the family and partnering with tissue preparation facilities across the nation who help support oncologists, reconstructive surgeons, and plastic surgeons," end quote, Headley said. Men and women who are seeking reconstruction through tissue donation also have several options to choose from, such as being a self-donor. Quote, "One option is to be able to donate tissue to yourself from another part of your body," end quote, Headley said. Quote, "Not everybody is eligible for that," end quote. Headley said that people may not be able to donate tissue to themselves because of previous treatments and overall health. She added that the size of tissue graft needed for reconstruction also impacts a patient's ability to self-donate. Quote, "That is where the donated tissue from somebody's yes and somebody's tragedy is going to help impact the reconstruction process," end quote, Headley said. Quote, "Tissue donation gives people the ability to make the choice to feel whole again and to feel comfortable in their own skin," end quote. Headley added that tissue and organ donation plays a large role in how people heal, survive, and can continue to provide the best kind of life that they can have and impact others. Quote, "Breast cancer is a difficult journey for everyone, the person who's impacted by it, the family members, and their community," end quote, Headley said. Quote, "Every choice that comes with that emotional time is a personal choice, and the best thing that we can do as a community is support people's personal choices, whether it's reconstruction or not," end quote. She encourages those impacted with breast cancer to talk to their oncologist, reconstructive surgeons, plastic surgeons, and local organ procurement organizations, OPO, about the best options available for breast reconstruction surgery. Headley said it's important for people to make the choice to register as a donor and to make their choice known. Quote, "Make the choice yourself, but also share the information that you want to provide a lasting legacy with your loved ones," end quote, Headley said. Quote, "Make sure your choice is known so that they can do the best to honor you once you are no longer able to make those decisions yourself," end quote. Headley also encourages people to learn more about organ and tissue donation and to reach out to their local OPO if they have any questions. Southwest Transplant Alliance also has a page that people can visit with answers to frequently asked questions. For more information about tissue and organ donation, visit their website.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. Section A. County and City Partner on $6 Million Road Projects by B.K. Richter. Midland County Commissioners received several presentations on road and infrastructure projects within the county Tuesday morning. The partnership between the City of Midland and the county was highlighted with approximately $6 million in reimbursements for 16 roadway projects. Gabe McClelland, the Engineering Services Director for the City of Midland, told commissioners that the city-county partnership has evolved over the years and has produced results. "We both have Vision Zero initiatives," McClelland told commissioners. "We both have a comprehensive safety action plan that resulted from that initiative, and we have shared goals from that initiative." "The goal of safe streets," McClelland said, "is something that both the city and the county are targeting. We have been successful recently in getting some grant funding for that, and so we will keep doing that as well." McClelland explained that his department works with a lot of local property owners, and that sometimes presents a bit of a barrier when it comes to the acquisition of the right-of-way. Our council adopted a strategic plan, and everything that we do aligns with that strategic plan. Specifically, the goals that are outlined in that strategic plan, he said. One of the biggest things that we talk about at City Hall in our department is keeping up with growth. It's become even more important because our city is very fast growing, so sometimes developing the infrastructure needed for that growth is difficult. McClelland acknowledged that in some places, growth has been challenging. In this presentation, we have identified six different locations of or 16 roadway projects where both the city and county have partnered in some way, he told commissioners. We don't always use our partnership to develop new roadways. We also reconstruct old roadways. One upcoming project is Occidental Parkway. Occidental Parkway is the only east-west arterial roadway that will link to future roads or link to Fairgrounds Road, he said. It is a future arterial roadway, north-south corridor there. And so that's important. It helps distribute traffic in that area. Another project is the extension of Fairgrounds Road from Loop 250 to Mockingbird Lane. This is one of the areas where we acknowledge that we need to catch up with growth. And it's been a good thing to work with the county to help get this done, McClelland said. Sinclair Road and State Highway 158, which is very close to the future Costco development, were also cited. There's been some other residential development that's taken place there, so truck bed volume has increased, and there's some safety mobility issues to address there as well, McClelland told commissioners. Another growth site is Avalon Road, and McClelland explained that the new Legacy High School will be built there. We also have a Citizens Collection Center that will be built right at Business 20 to future Avalon Road, he said. McClelland said, when you look at Northwest Midland, it's a fast-growing area. It shows the extension of Wadley to the west. It shows County Road 1250. It shows Sinclair. What it shows is the pieces of the puzzle coming together in a very fast-growing area, he told commissioners. Other projects included signal swaps or reimbursement for a signal from the county to the city in taking over the maintenance of a signal light. Additionally, pedestrian improvements at the Midland County Courthouse were also addressed.
Food. Poppy seeds draw attention of lawmakers. It sounds like a joke, poppy seeds infused with opioids. Indeed, it was a plotline on the sitcom Seinfeld, but for some it has been a tragedy. People have died after drinking tea brewed from unwashed poppy seeds. And after eating lemon poppy seed bread or an everything bagel, mothers reportedly have been separated from newborns because the women failed drug tests. Poppy seeds come from the plant that produces opium and from which narcotics such as morphine and codeine are derived. During harvesting and processing, the seeds can become coated with the opium fluid. Members of the House and Senate have proposed legislation to, quote, prohibit the distribution and sale of contaminated poppy seeds in order to prevent harm, addiction, and further deaths from morphine-contaminated poppy seeds, end quote. The bill was one of several on the agenda for a September 10th House hearing. The day before the hearing, the Marshall Project and Reveal reported on a woman who ate a salad with poppy seed dressing before giving birth. Tested positive at the hospital for opiates, was reported to child welfare, and saw her baby taken into protective custody. Almost 2 weeks passed before she was allowed to bring her baby home, the story said. Quote, it's not an urban legend. Eating poppy seeds can cause diners to test positive for codeine on a urinalysis, end quote. The Defense Department warned military personnel in 2023. the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency long ago issued a similar warning to athletes. The Center for Science and the Public Interest, a watchdog group, petitioned the FDA in 2021 to limit the opiate content of poppy seeds. In May, after more than 3 years with no response, it sued the agency to force action. Quote, so far the FDA has been negligent in protecting consumers, end quote, said Steve Hakala, whose son died after consuming poppy seed tea and who has joined forces with CSPI. The lawsuit was put on hold in July after the FDA said it would respond to the group's petition by the end of February 2025. The FDA did not answer questions for this article. The agency generally does not comment on litigation, spokesperson Courtney Rhodes said. A 2021 study co-authored by CSPI personnel found more than 100 reports to poison control centers between 2000 and 2018 resulting from intentional abuse or misuse of poppy seeds, said CSPI scientist Ava Greenthal, one of the study's authors. Only rarely would baked goods or other food items containing washed poppy seeds trigger positive drug tests, doctors who have studied the issue said. It's, quote, exquisitely doubtful, end quote, that the, quote, relatively trivial, end quote, amount of morphine in an everything bagel or the like would cause anyone harm, said Irving Haber, a doctor who has written about poppy seeds, specializes in pain medicine, and signed the CSPI petition to the FDA. On the other hand, tea made from large quantities of unwashed poppy seeds could lead to addiction and overdose, doctors said. The risks are heightened if the person drinking the brew is also consuming other opioids, such as prescription pain relievers. Benjamin Lay, a physician who chairs a program on opioids at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, said he has been treating a patient who developed long-term opioid addiction from consuming poppy seed tea. The patient, a man in his 30s, found it at a health food store and was under the impression it would help him relax and recover from gym workouts. After a few months, he tried to stop and experienced withdrawal symptoms, Lay said. Another patient, an older woman, developed withdrawal symptoms under similar circumstances, but responded well to treatment, Lay said. Some websites tout poppy seed tea as offering health benefits, and some sellers, quote, may use specific language such as raw, unprocessed, or unwashed to signal that their products contain higher concentrations of opiates than properly processed seeds, end quote, the CSPI lawsuit said. Steve Hakala's son, Stephen Hakala, a music teacher, had been experiencing anxiety and insomnia, for which poppy seed tea is promoted as a natural remedy, the lawsuit said. In 2016, at age 24, he ordered a bag of poppy seeds online, rinsed them with water, and consumed the rinse. He died of morphine poisoning. The only source of morphine found in Stephen's home where he died was commercially available poppy seeds, a medical examiner at the Arkansas State Crime Lab said in a letter to the father. The medical examiner wrote that poppy seeds, quote, very likely, end quote, caused Stephen's death. Steve Hakala estimated that the quantity of poppy seeds found in a 1-liter plastic water bottle in his son's home could have delivered more than 10 times a lethal dose. Steve Hakala and his wife, Betty, have funded CSPI's efforts to call attention to the issue. The publisher of KFF Health News, David Rousseau, is on the CSPI board. The lawsuit also cited mothers who, like those in the investigation by the Marshall Project and Reveal, ran afoul of rules meant to protect newborns. For example, though Jamie Silikowski had not used opioids while pregnant, she was initially prevented from leaving the hospital with her baby, the suit said. Silikowski recalled that before going to the hospital, she had eaten lemon poppy seed bread at Tim Hortons, a fast food chain, CSPI said in its petition. Quote, no one in the hospital believed Ms. Silikowski or appeared to be aware that the test results could occur from poppy seeds, end quote. People from Child Protective Services made unannounced visits to her home, interviewed her other children, and questioned teachers at their school, she said in an interview. While on maternity leave, she had to undergo drug testing, Silikowski said. Quote, peeing in front of someone like I'm a criminal, it was just mortifying, end quote. Even family members were questioning her, and there was nothing she could do to dispel doubts, she said. Quote, relationships were torn apart, end quote, she said. The parent company of Tim Hortons, Restaurant Brands International, which also owns Burger King and Popeyes, did not respond to questions from KFF Health News. In July, the Washington Post reported that Trader Joe's Everything But the Bagel seasoning was banned and being confiscated in South Korea because it contains poppy seeds. Trader Joe's did not respond to inquiries from this article. The seasoning is listed for sale on the company's website. The U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency says unwashed poppy seeds can kill when used alone or in combination with other drugs. While poppy seeds are exempt from drug control under the Controlled Substances Act, opium contaminants on the seeds are not, the agency says. The Justice Department has brought criminal prosecutions over the sale of unwashed poppy seeds. Meanwhile, the legislation to control poppy seeds contamination has not gained much traction. The Senate bill, introduced by Senator Tom Cotton, Republican Arkansas, has two co-sponsors. The House bill, introduced by Representative Steve Womack, Republican Arkansas, has none. Though it was on the agenda, it didn't come up at the recent hearing.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.